20 years of 24, and the red letter day for us. We are thrilled to have as our guest today, John Kassar. There's so many things that have come up. We've had all these conversations over the last several months with different cast and crew members. There's a couple things that come up repeatedly. Buffy comes up a lot. The X-Files, Nikita is a word that we hear all the time. Kiefer, of course. And then we hear, have you talked to John Kassar yet? Like that's, we've had more people that have said to us, he's going to talk to you, right? And we're like, because we've known this for a while. You wrote the book.
Okay? I wrote the book.
You wrote the book.
Literally wrote the book.
Wrote the book and took the pictures.
So, and took the pictures, yeah. And it, as, you know, as the 24 historian, among other roles and hats that you've worn, you know, everybody has said, you got to talk to John. So we're talking to John today, and we're thrilled.
You know,
so
just so you know, you had a good influence on them, because most of them called me. I said, you got to do this. And I said, all right. Well, not that I was never going to, but yes, that, you've influenced a lot of 24 people out there.
That makes me feel good, for sure.
Yes, definitely.
And two of us are Canadian. So yeah. I'm in Windsor.
And I'm in Hamilton.
You guys
in
know, Hamilton. I mean, I heard you talking to Howard about it, that we have a huge Canadian connection on that show.
We do.
We'll talk about it a little later, because I have a theory about the Canadians on that show and how it affected the show.
Beautiful. Well, welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome. So to Ryan's introduction, we'd love to know, how did you get involved with 24 as a director, and what was your experience like working on 24?
Well, it is kind of an interesting story, because I was doing a show called Dead Zone in Vancouver when I was called to potentially come before that I was brought in by Joel, because Joel and I did Nikita together. And the funniest story is that Joel was already thinking about 24 while we were doing Nikita, and he pitched it to me one day, and he said, so this is what I'm going to do. And it's in real time, and everything happens in real time. And I thought about it for a second. I thought, wow, that's going to be so boring. You mean you have to like watch him get in a car and drive to the place and sit outside and wait for the bad guys to come out? Who's going to watch that? That's going to be like so boring.
Right.
How did I know that, you know, it was going to have the heartbeat, you know, of a cheetah and move like stink.
Right.
So good thing he didn't listen to me right away. He called me in and said, look, you know, what happens with network shows too, and especially when you're kind of new with the network, like Joel was, they kind of tell you what directors to use. You know, it's like they have you on a shorter leash, put it that way. And so I was brought in at the point where they were deciding whether they pick up another 12 episodes. They were, you know, they were at the 12 episode mark. And so Joel got to pick one director, and he picked me. Lucky me. He picked me to.
Good choice.
He had worked with me with Nikita, and we had, you know, it was a very successful relationship there. I love working with Joel, and he liked working with me. So he brought me in, but he said right away, he put me in his office and said, okay, you're the first guy they're letting me pick. Do not screw this up. You pick another director. I'm like, okay, there's, you know, not like there isn't enough pressure as it is, but thank you very much for that.
Right.
But again, and then I came in and I saw the show and I just went, wait, what is this? This is like, you know, television has a format to it, or used to have a format to it,
right?
Which is the wide shot and the over the shoulders and the close ups. Suddenly I'm watching this thing and I'm like, wait, there's no wide shots. Wait, there's no masters. There's no exterior shots of buildings. It's completely different. The camera's going wherever the camera goes where the actors go. What a concept. And instead of like being afraid of that, because some directors, it's hard to break them out of what they, I was at the point going, I can't do this boring sort of same kind of stuff anymore. And I saw that and I just went crazy. I just went, oh my God, this was built for me. You know, and because I have a camera background, you know, I was a camera operator and a Steadicam operator for at least 10 years. It just like right away, I was just like, oh no, this is me. I love this.
It really shows.
Yeah. And I did the one episode and I was just hooked. And then here comes the funny part. The funny part is I was doing a show called Dead Zone in Vancouver. Now I get to that point. And, and I was doing one episode and it was going well. So they said, look, you know, you want to stay in Vancouver and do another episode? I said, yeah, sure. No problem. I got nothing booked. So I'll do it. Then I got a call from my agent the next day after I said yes to them, but I was still shooting there, and said, you know, Joel just called. He wants you as a producer director full time on 24 next year or now. They were just starting to shoot their second season. And I said, yeah, great. I said, but I just took the show. And the producer said, no, that's impossible. We just checked with your agent. I said, yeah, he doesn't even know. So I'm not available for another 2 weeks. And they said, well, then they're not going to give it to you. You have to, like, take it right now.
Wow.
You have to, like, say no to those people. And I said, well, I can't say no to those people. I just said yes. They're moving their schedule around. I have to do it.
Yeah.
And, said, and then my agent called. And Joel called. And they're all swearing at me. I said, guys, you should know me by now. I said yes to somebody. I can't leave them behind. I can't do it. I said, if you can wait 2 weeks, I would gladly do this show. Obviously, I love this show. And it was, no, you can't. It went back and forth. And I said, end of story. I'm not taking it. Thank you very much for offering it to me. I'll do a few episodes for you, but I got to do the show. And Joel said, okay, fine. And he hung up on me. And then the next day, I get another call from Joel. He goes, okay, when are you available? And I said, in 2 weeks. He goes, all right, you're starting in 2 weeks. So it was great.
Oh, so close.
And I got to tell you, it's one of those life lessons I'm constantly teaching. I do things at USC and UCLA, and I tell people right away, the first thing you got to have in this business is a great reputation.
Yeah.
You can't be the person that's saying yes to people and getting them all excited about having you there and then just bailing out because something better came along. It just doesn't work that way. And so that's a true life lesson. Now, if
you
it
just,
didn't work out, I probably would have been sad for the rest of my life, but it did work out. So
you described a 24 plot line right there.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I came on second season and it was, you know, right away. It just fell into it so quickly. And then, you know, and again, same thing. When I first got there, I think they had me for 4 episodes. And I looked at Joel, I said, dude, I'm getting back on a plane. I didn't come here to do 4 episodes.
Right.
I wanted to do all these damn things if I could.
Yeah.
So, you know, then it went to 6, and then it went to 8, then it went to 10. And then I did 10 episodes every year after that. I think 1 year I only did 6, so I did the pilot. I did a pilot with Joel that called Company Man that never got picked up. But I did 10 episodes every year, which I did the first ones. I did the finales. So it was really my baby.
Yeah, the more memorable ones, most of the memorable ones have your stamp on them, actually.
It's interesting that you started with that story, because I had written in my notes the word relationships. And if there's anything that has been kind of the through line through all of our discussions, is the importance of relationships. We talked to D.B. Woodside the other day. He got Dennis Haysbert onto Lucifer because he couldn't wait to work with him again because of 24.
Of course.
And then you tell a story of how you basically held your ground to maintain your integrity.
Yeah.
You know, even though...
I got a better one than that.
That's very cool.
I did a show called Baywatch Nights.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
It was the spin-off show that the producers did to keep the crews from, like, leaving. Because it was such a family show.
Right.
Just invent another show so no one has to leave in the off-season. We'll just, like, keep everyone working. It's a family show.
Right.
So Baywatch Nights show that I came on to. It was okay. Let's just say that. Baywatch Nights had a producer on it that knew Joel Surnow and went to Joel Surnow and said, you're looking for a guy to do a show for you. You got to check out John Cassar.
Yeah.
And then Joel came to me with Nikita. And then Nikita turned into 24. So I always tell people, because I did Baywatch, I ended up on 24. So
that's amazing.
That's amazing.
You can never discount what you're doing. And every time you're out there, if you're putting 100%, whether it's Baywatch Nights or all those little shows I did in Canada, you know, it doesn't matter. If you put it out there, it's going to come back at you. And that's been sort of my career, knock on wood.
Speaking of Joel Surnow, I mean, we talked to Kiefer a few weeks ago, and the one thing that Kiefer kept saying about Joel is, Joel is a big idea guy. Creating 24 is a big idea. A lot of the storylines that Joel created, you know, were big ideas. So he said, you know, there was just a lot of great things said about Joel and Bob and Howard Gordon and Manny and Evan.
Oh yeah, I mean, we had the prime. First of all, you got to know that our writing team was all showrunners. I mean, everyone you just mentioned had their own shows.
Right.
It was one of those things where it's like, well, we can get like normal sort of writer room guys, but why don't we get the showrunners that they don't have their own shows right now? So they were all able to run a show. So we virtually had the best of the best. And I got to tell you, I've been on a lot of shows. I don't think there was anything harder to write than 24. It was so difficult, you know, and it's one thing to write it for 24 episodes. First of all, let's talk about 24 episodes.
Yeah.
Right.
8 and 10 that everyone's just knocking off now. We did 24.
Right.
When I finished one season, by time, you know, because I went right through the editing process, by the time I finished that episode, 3 weeks later, we started the next season. Like, we did that for 7 straight years.
Oh, wow.
While I was shooting the last episode, the writers are already writing the next season, and they're coming to me with ideas. And I'm like, okay, dudes.
My head's got to stay focused.
I need to put my blinders on. I'll talk to you, like, in a couple of weeks. I can't, like, start thinking about next year already. Wow. Like, so that's the first difficult thing about this thing. And eventually, you know, we didn't get canceled. It was just one of those things where no one could do it anymore. It was virtually a high wire act that no one could really maintain anymore for that period of time, with only 3 weeks off between every season for 7 seasons. Talk to anybody. They'll tell you that's the craziest thing they've ever heard, but that's what we were doing.
Oh yeah.
You know, so it was something else to write. So, you know, I mean, a lot of these, like HBO, like I'd be up, you know, when I was up for Emmys with the guys from HBO, and they'd be saying, yeah, so we write all 12 episodes, make sure they're perfect. I'm like, yeah, right. we were writing, and the other great thing is we were writing as we went along. There was no major plan, you know. And I love that the writers kind of admitted it after a while. You know, there were other shows that were on the air that were continuing storylines that had, like, people crashed in the jungle and stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
right, right.
Yeah, no, we know the whole thing. We know it all. It's all.
Yeah, that's all malarkey is what that was.
The time doesn't allow you to do it. It takes so long to write the episodes. You could never, it would take 4 months. You'd have to stop for 4 months to write the episodes. And we had 3 weeks off in between seasons. So it's impossible. These guys were virtually, you know, and I would go in and I'd, like, read an episode and I go, oh my God, I love this, how this ends. Like, how's Jack getting out of this? And they'd go, we don't know. Do you have any ideas?
What do you got?
We have an idea. Like, we're not 100% yet. And I'm like, okay, I can't wait.
Fantastic.
It really was a specialty that I don't know any group of men that could have done it again like they did. It really was fantastic. And the other great story I have, and I'm just talking away, but is that David Fury came to us. And, you know, David's an amazing writer and you know, a good friend now. And he just came from Lost. And they virtually had just won the Emmy for best show. And he came to us, and I said, and we were like, I don't know, third season, fourth season, we were well into our run. And I said, what are you doing over here? I said, you're on, like, the hottest show on TV right now. He said, well, they're kind of writing as they go along. They don't really know where the show's going. And I said, yeah, that's kind of what we're doing here.
Yeah.
I told you, but we're kind of doing the same thing. And he said, you know, the difference is, he said, whatever you guys are doing, and if you're writing it as you go along, what's fantastic about this show is that by the time I get to episode 24, it all was one big story.
Yeah, yeah.
So you might be sort of, you know, taking that trek and going off into these tangents, but I feel that by the time you get to the end, you leave the audience satisfied. Yeah, you might leave a little, you know, thing hanging for next year, but you feel like I've watched 24 episodes. You gave me a beginning, middle, and an end.
Yeah,
you didn't
yeah.
just give me a beginning and a middle and said, yeah, yeah, the end is somewhere 10 seasons from now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It felt like every year. And it's true. If you think about our show.
Oh, it's absolutely
true.
Like
one sort of, you know, big story, whatever that big story was, whether it was a president and his wife, whatever it was, always sort of came around. You might have taken 17 different tangents to get back around.
Well, even if the end of the season meant Jack was going to pick up a phone call and then get thrown on a ship.
Yeah, that was one of our rare cliffhangers. We didn't.
That was a great ending.
Yeah, it was a great ending.
Because it was kind of aiming toward, guess what? This is going to be one of those happy ending ones.
Yeah. Trying to keep surprising you year after year, that's the difficult part.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they all looked at each other and went, first of all, I don't know if people have told you this, but there were ideas of, like, to do something different. And now they're air traffic controllers for 24 hours. And, you know, it's like, and so that was going on because basically they all looked at each other. How are we doing this again? How are we going to put out the same quality of 24 episodes we just put out? Like, how are we going to do this? And I was there at the beginning of the second year. But right away, I mean, just reading the first script, I was already like, guys, are you kidding? We're already on a great start. I mean, you just keep this up. And second year, I thought was really strong. Mm-hmm. You know, and second year, you know, I don't know if, you know, when you've talked to other people, but in television, second year is everything. You know, first year, okay, it's kind of the honeymoon period. If you have a good idea, you can pull off a good first season. But right. what do you do in that second year? What do you do in that second year to tee yourself up for the next 4 years, for example? That's the difficult part.
Sure.
And I thought we had a really strong second year.
Unbelievably strong. Sort of defined how it would go going forward.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're all people that own all the box sets. Yeah. And I'm still streaming it on Disney Plus in the middle of the night, as if I'd never seen it before.
I still stream on Hulu as we wait for Orville.
That's right.
I tell you, I'm always impressed when people say, I just saw the whole season again, because I promised, I don't know who, the fans, I guess, when I went to London, because it was, you know, it was a 7-year gap between when we finished, you know, season 7, I guess it was. Or season 8, because I wasn't involved in season 8.
Right.
And when we did London. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch them all again just to get, you know. And I started doing it. It's a challenge. It's a lot of hours.
Yeah.
Brushing my teeth, I'm watching. Every waking moment, I was watching 24, you know, as I was prepping the London show. So it was...
It's so crazy when you look at how much the technology's changed in 20 years.
Yeah.
I was in between interviews, and my wife was driving, and so I was watching one of the episodes on my phone, and in my head I went, that's how Jack got the information in season 1. He got the film sent to his phone. I was like, this is blowing my mind.
Well, I have a great story about that, because we when we shot in Washington, D.C., because we had a massive amount of people that loved the show that were actually in the government.
Right.
And, you know, Obama loved the show. I mean, there was a whole bunch that loved it on both sides. It's crazy. You know, I directed John McCain. How great is that?
That is amazing.
You know, that's awesome.
Yeah. So so when we were in Washington, suddenly there was somebody that said, you know, they know you're here. The real CTU wants to invite you to the And I'm like,
whoa,
I'm in.
And yeah, absolutely.
And inviting everybody. I said, yeah, crew, cast, whoever wants to come can come. And so we shot that day, because we were all daylight dependent. So right after it got dark, we jumped into like 3 vans, and off we went outside of, you know, to the real CTU. I forget the name of it, but it's not CTU, but it's a counter terrorist unit.
Yeah.
And this is all a true story. And as we're pulling up, it's a big glass lobby, and I look, and there's like 200 people in the lobby, and I'm like, wow, I guess there was like some other tour, I suppose. And we all get out, and there's someone meets us, says, come on in, everyone's waiting for you. I said, what do you mean everyone? I said, all those people in there? He said, yeah, half those people's shifts like ended 4 hours ago. We're just here to say hello to you.
And that's awesome. In,
that's amazing.
Standing ovation. We don't even know what to do. They give me a microphone. I'm like, hi. sure what this is. But the guy explained to me that this is the real deal. And they watch our show religiously. And he said, there are people here because of your show, because of what you do.
Yeah.
And they want to be part of that.
Yeah.
And so we get toured around. And here's the best part. We virtually walk into their main room. And I look up, and the guy sees my face. He goes, yeah, kind of looks like your set, doesn't it? I'm like, yeah, it's kind of identical to our set. He said, yeah, this is all new. We just like built all of it. I said,
oh my God.
The big screens, which were all off because we weren't allowed to see anything.
Right, right.
It was our set. It was absolutely ridiculous. So I said to him, I said, well, okay, if you've got our set, like all the stuff we do, you know, with the satellites and seeing license plates and all that stuff, he goes, there isn't a single thing you've done on your show that we can't do.
Sure.
He said, the only difference is Chloe does it like in an hour and it takes us 2 days. But you do. So there's the technology right there. We were virtually, even though some of it we were really just making up as we went along.
Right, right.
Absolutely no technical.
Or so you thought.
We just, again, it's very smart writers that were right on top of like the technology and what's the next thing. And so they were always just right on the edge of everything. So we were like 5 minutes in the future, I think is what Howard called it.
Right.
That is.
Right.
That's kind of what we were. But to find out from the real CTU that, and then one other story that goes with that, when we were meeting all the people, you know, they were telling us, you know, what, who they were and what they did. The CIA guys only use first names.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Bob and the CIA were like, okay. But here's the best part. The analysts were like, you know, I'm John Smith. My nickname's Chloe. You know, I'm Bill.
Oh my God.
I'm Bill somebody. Yeah, my family calls me Chloe too. So all these guys that were analysts were being compared by their families. We walked out of there, you know, whatever, there was 20 of us, whatever, that, you know, that I had from LA. We had spent a couple of weeks doing the Washington, D.C. Season. We all walked out of there like flying high.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I can only imagine.
We're like influencing the real people. This is fantastic.
TV productions, film productions have been recreating the White House, and this is the other way around. Mm-hmm. They were recreating your CTO.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. That is one way to look
and
at
mind
it.
Mind you, they'll deny all these stories, I'm sure, because he's tapping my phone as we talk.
Oh, yeah.
Because the other thing they did, which was really fun, is we all had cameras. In those days, the phones really didn't have cameras yet. I mean,
right.
But we all have those little, like, you know, snapshot cameras. And we're all taking pictures like crazy, and we're all posing with everything and taking pictures. And then when we get to the door, the guy's like, camera, please. He just starts erasing all the pictures. And we're like, no, there's other pictures. He goes, yeah, it's okay. We know how to use these cameras. It's fine. And all he did was just erase the pictures on everybody's cameras. If they told you not to take pictures, you would have snuck a picture or two.
Right.
They didn't say anything. They waited till you're at the door. They took your camera and just erased all the pictures.
That is so funny.
I was like, these guys know their stuff. That's for sure. For the cast and crew that were there that day, we came out really flying high.
Amazing.
That must feel great.
What was your experience like working on 24 Legacy as for the 6 episodes you were involved in?
It was really great. I really enjoyed it. I thought I had a great cast. You know,
you did.
We were
absolutely
doing what we did.
You absolutely did.
You know, it was, you know, I don't know. It should have been given a better chance than it was. You know, I think we tinkered with it a little too much. You know, I think when they made the first show, they just kind of went, this is our show. This is what we do. And, you know, you had Joel running it. And Joel's really kind of, you know, you got to be a tough showrunner. I learned from Joel right away that this is what I know the show is. And I don't care what notes come from who, this is what the show is. And every good show on TV has that heartbeat, you know, and I just think it didn't quite have someone sticking up for it like that, which was a little unfortunate. Because I thought we did a good job with that. And it was, look, if nothing else, you didn't have Jack Bauer. We get it. But there's something about the format that is just really enticing and fun to watch.
Exactly.
I enjoyed it. I went back, and when we talked to Tony, I went back and watched the Tony episodes. And then I had to play the whole thing out. I couldn't just watch the Tony episodes. I had to play the whole thing out. I thought I was strong. I wasn't, right? Yeah. But I never understood it, which was kind of the foundation for my group was – the 24 groups had become this divisive thing of, no, Jack, well, I'm going to, no way, I can't, and I just couldn't handle that. I was like, oh, there's so many characters in such a broad world for this unique concept.
Yeah, right.
That it has to have a place. It has to have a place. Jack or no Jack, it has to have a place.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything that makes it to air, you have to have people championing it. You know, and even, you know, Howard told you, we were in a hit right out of the gate, like the first season. It was in the middle range ratings wise. But there were people, but I'm talking about not the fans. I'm just talking about the people that objectives are going to give it a chance.
At the studio.
They go with those numbers. And sometimes you need someone to say, you don't forget the numbers. I like the show. I think it's got potential. And they save it. And that's what we had. And I just don't think. Time, place, who knows? I mean, I don't know the exact details of why, you know, it didn't continue, but...
I mean, my theory, for what it's worth, you know how Star Wars has their 9, and then they have their Star Wars stories, Solo, and if you called it a 24 story...
It was a 24 story.
That's yeah, awesome. 24 story. Absolutely. I think...
You get a little Carlos, which was great.
Yeah, which is amazing.
There's a better Peter Weller story, because you remember Peter Weller?
And yes, of course.
Yes.
But you remember how he died? He died in the last episode on the submarine.
Yeah,
and Jack shooting him. Well, what happened in that in Peter? And I don't know how many times it happened, but basically, I think he died like in episode 6 originally. And he would go to the writer's room and he'd have a box of cigars and he'd chat them all up. And then a new script came out and be like, okay, he's alive. He's not dead yet in 6. They rewrote it. Now he's like dead in episode 8. And like. He just kept bribing himself into the last episode of the show. And I love Peter Weller, and I'm sure he'll laugh at the story. But virtually at the very end, when Jack kills him, he says, maybe I don't die right away. Maybe I say the last thing to Jack Bauer. I'm like, no, you're dead, Peter.
There's two things that we know for sure. Chang's dead and Peter's dead. Like,
and Peter's dead. That's right. Peter stayed alive for a long time. And by the way, so did Carlos.
I was just about to say he told a similar story.
Yeah, well, because first of all, you know, to stay alive, to try to convince writers, you just have to have a better idea than they have, or at least convince them it's a better idea. And so what his deal was, which was brilliant, which was like, you know, episode 5 was a regular character slaughter. That first episode, like, you know, we killed Dennis Hanford. And his theory was, like, you kill me and Michelle in that first episode, it's a huge shocker. But what if you just kill one of us in that episode, and then you can kill one of us later and get double your money?
Well, I like how he didn't say, go with Reiko. Reiko should live, I should die. Yeah, that was...
And look what happened after that. He shows up in his legacy and then shows up again before that again. It was brilliant. It was really
That's great.
Well, I mean, I haven't said this before, but I live right across from Detroit. I can't go there right now, but I live right across from the city of Detroit. And I saw RoboCop on opening night in Detroit, old Detroit. Mm-hmm. And so I haven't said this publicly, but whoever was involved in getting all of the Clarence Boddicker's crew to be on 24 at some point was amazing.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant, because they were great actors on that show, and we always had great actors. I'm so proud of the fact that we, and it's funny because, you know, Fox was still, you know, it was kind of still the 90210 network. And
right.
X-Files was a little different. They were more in our world, but 90210 was all, it was kind of what CW is now. You know, everyone's pretty, everyone's good looking, you know, and here we are, and we've got these, you know, character actors from deep, deep, deep in the character actor roster. And because they're great actors, you know, look at Glenn Morshower. Glenn Morshower, lasted 7 episodes or 7 years, whatever it was. He's just a great actor.
Yeah.
And there he was, just, you know, hired to do a couple of lines. I mean, we had Daniel Day-Kim. I don't know if you know the Daniel Day-Kim
story. Oh, absolutely.
But the Daniel Day-Kim story is that we hired him as, you know, CTU guy number 2. You know, he says one over.
Right.
You know, so it's like one line, whatever it is. And he was just good. So we just, you know, every time the script said CTU guy, I was like, Daniel Day-Kim. Let's get Daniel Day-Kim. And then I think at the end of the second season, he's the guy in the helicopter. Yep. That he's the sniper guy.
That's right.
The guy in the Coliseum. Yep. Just before he kills Jack. That's Daniel Day-Kim.
Yeah, he graduated.
So, you know, we just made his part bigger and bigger as it went along, because every time we recognized a good actor, we just jumped right in there and giving him more and more work.
Yeah.
And I remember the second season started and there was like CTU guy. I'm like, Daniel Day-Kim, get me Daniel Day-Kim. And they're like, no, he's doing this show in Hawaii. I don't know. Not yet, but there's a chance it's going to get picked up. Okay, if it doesn't get picked up, we'll get Daniel Day-Kim. And of course, the rest is history.
Daniel Day-Kim was not available.
Not available.
If it's any consolation, I spent the first couple seasons of Lost calling him Agent Baker.
Yeah.
I was like, look at Agent Baker and his wife are stranded in Hawaii.
And then we had this great situation in London where we worked with John Boyega.
Yes.
And I loved Attack the Block. So when the casting said, look, I'm going to get the kid from Castle Block, I said, bring him in.
Absolutely.
He was fantastic in that movie. And he came in, he was a drone pilot. And he did a great job for us, and he was a great actor, and, you know, there was no problem. But, of course, you know, suddenly we're in London when they announced the cast. And it's Boyega. Now, we'd finished working with him, but we saw him, like, when we did our premiere in London. He was there, and he looked at me and goes, dude, how many times were you talking Star Wars right in front of me? He goes, and I'm sitting there going, I can't tell him. I can't tell him.
Wow, he knew.
I was like, God, they'd be very proud that you were that secretive about it. So we played with John just before he started his Star Wars career.
That's amazing. Amazing. Oh, and the other, Zachary Quinto.
And Zach, too, of course.
Zach was on Heroes.
Zach was a whole season with us. Yeah, he was great.
Heroes and Star Trek. And
we've been very lucky. Now, Kate Mara, we've had great casts. And that's Debbie Manwiller, who's our casting person through all the seasons. She's one of the best in town. And then, you know, it got to a point, too, where people wanted to be on the show. So it got a little easier then. You know, once you got a little heat, people then wanted to be on the show, which is great. And again, also heard, you know, you guys talking the other day about, you know, it wasn't like movie stars were doing television when
right.
when 24 yeah. first came out. You know, this was
something
very different, you know, to have Kiefer Sutherland there. And even the story I tell too is that, you know, he was not used to, we ended up with like me and Brad Turner, basically the last four or five seasons, it was just the two of us in all the episodes because there was a comfort in having like one director or just a couple, you know, Kiefer wasn't used to that. He came from the world of feature films. He wasn't used to different directors talking to him every episode. That kind of freaked him out a little bit the first season.
Yeah.
And so the joke was, it's like, we're doing a TV show. No one tell Kiefer. He thinks it's a movie. that was our running joke, is that we had to treat it like a movie. And we did. It was shot like a film. It wasn't like, oh, we don't have time. Let's just do this simplest, stupidest. That was never part of the conversation on Twitter.
Yeah.
It totally shows. I mean, and we're all, I think, in accord when I say that the way that it was produced, presented, changed the entire format, created binge watching long before there was a Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, any of that. It took must-see TV and grabbed it by the throat, right? And really said, and it was the first time that movie quality, at least from my experience, I'm 42, going to be 43 next week. I hadn't seen anything movie quality like that on television.
Well, the other fact that hardly anyone knows, 24 was the first show in history to put out one season on DVD before the next season started.
We were the first show ever to do that.
Because they were panicking that people wouldn't watch it because they thought, oh, well, I didn't see the first season. I don't know what's happening.
So
Fox were very, very, very smart in saying, well, let's put out. And it's not like we were the first show on DVDs, but back then you got Star Trek's old Star Trek shows on DVD, shows that were long, you know, gone. They weren't on the air anymore. You know, and there was no access to them. There wasn't streaming. It was either you bought them on DVD if you were a fan of a show or not. So Fox were the first ones to say, let's put this out. Let people watch the first season and tee themselves up for the second season. Here's the other story, because everyone's always telling me how much they love the show and how hooked they are. Well, when I was doing that show in Vancouver, I told you about Dead Zone. So when I was there doing that show, you know, what they do when there's going to be a new director, they send you some shows to get you warmed up so you see what people are doing. So they send my wife the first three episodes. I did episode 12, and they were still shooting. So they send me, like, send to my house three VHS, by the way, not even DVD, VHS tapes of, like, episode 1, 2, and 3. And so my wife, you know, she said, oh, well, this is John's next show. And she put them in the machine, and she started watching them. Well, I get a call one night, you know, my nightly call. Hey, honey, how are you doing? She goes, oh, my God, I need more. I said, I don't even know what you're talking about. She goes, they just sent me this show, 24, the one you're going to do right after this. She said, I need more episodes. I need to see what happens. I said, honey, I don't even think they've shot 4 yet. The only three episodes that exist right now. She goes, oh, no, I can't wait. I got to have those other episodes. And right away, I thought, wait a second. You know, my wife is a smart lady, and if she's hooked up on this show, and because it was Joel, that's what it was. She goes, you worked with Joel on Nikita. I just wanted to see what the next show is, so I put the shows in. She goes, I can't wait. You got to keep the episodes as you finish doing them. And then the funny thing is, instead of that, as we started shooting the show over the, you know, 7 years that we did the show, we became the party house, and so we had huge parties here, and I'd have to tell people, because you watch it on, you know, you watch it every Monday night or Tuesday, whenever we were on air, watch it like week by week. She didn't want me to, I said, I can.
Oh, you didn't get the advance for her to watch?
I want to see it on the air. Yep. So of course we'd be finished the season. We'd be having a party here, and I'd have to go to everyone and go, Dennis, you can't tell her you died. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
You tell her you died. I'd be like, look, Kiefer, you can't tell her that you shot that guy. Do not talk about the show. I'd have to go to everybody. I put the show in front of her because she's a huge fan. And for me, it was fantastic because I got to see, like, a real audience. You know, I get to see the audience
reaction. Genuine reaction.
Real audience reaction. And, of course, I got a couple of punches when I killed Edgar. That was
Oh, I bet you did.
You know that The day I got my wife hooked on 24 was one of the greatest days. I don't know if you heard, we scheduled our honeymoon around arriving in Vegas 3 hours before the show would air, because you couldn't just go watch it on streaming it at that point.
That's right. You had to watch it live.
Exactly.
Yep, so. No, it was the must-see TV. I hate to point that twice, but it was the only thing that ever lived up to that phrase.
You know what I find funny now, too? I find, because, you know, it's been 20 years, now I get, you know, 20-year-olds saying, yeah, you know, I love the show. Because you know, to them, it's like, you know, you watch something on streaming, you have no sense of time. You
don't mm-hmm. Right, right. Something
that, hey, people said this is a good show. You start watching it like it's all new again. So for all this new audience in streaming, they're just like, they're going through the same thing we all did when it came out the first time, which I just find really fun this late in the game.
Justin is 29. I'm 52. Aaron's 42.
And Justin, so we're 29? Like, when did you start watching the show? When you were five?
I started watching 24. My best friend and I, we were across the street. I was in grade 11, so I would have been 16 or 17. And it was the spring of 2009. It was like April 2009. So it was the last 2 months of grade 11. And we started, we rented the first season on DVD. And I think after the first three episodes, my friend and I were hooked. So we were watching 24 almost every night. For hours and hours.
That's 3 or 4 years you'd have to catch up on.
And we watched the first five seasons in almost a month and a half. And then the way season five ended, it was like a big cliffhanger. So we wanted to see season six. But when we got to season six, it was June. So it was the last month of grade 11. So last month of school before summer vacation. And my best friend's mom said, all right, for June, I want you guys to focus on school, like focus on studying for exams, your final projects. She's like, no 24 for a whole month because I don't want you guys to get distracted.
Yeah, I love that word, punishment. That's great.
And we were so mad about that. So my friend, we still had the DVDs rented. He was like, all right, mom, can I hold on to the DVDs tonight? I just want to hold on to them. She's like, what do you need them for? She's like, you're not going to watch it. He goes, I just want to hold on to them. So my friend, when his parents went to bed, my friend Daniel, he would call me. He goes, Justin, my parents are in bed. I'll sneak you over and we'll sneak in some 24. So we used to sneak in 24 at night while his parents were in bed. And then if we hear footsteps, my friend would hide me in his fruit cellar with the lights off.
That's 24 contraband.
Yes.
That's a very funny story.
So we got hooked on it, and yeah, no, and it's, and I'm glad we did. It's an amazing, superb show, and I still watch it to this day. And
On Disney in the middle of the night.
I've got to tell you too. The one thing I've got to give kudos to the cast and the crew. It was, and I'd done a lot of shows up to that point. There was something in the air on that show. There was a magic about everything. It was just, you had to get those same people in that time and that space that put it together, from the writers to the cast to the crew that we had. It was just something that hit for that one. It was the perfect storm. It truly was the perfect storm. And yeah, we could do it again. And, you know, there were different versions of it, which were good also. I think, you know, I thought the one we shot in England was really good. The LA version of it, the one that we shot.
Oh, absolutely.
It just, you know, right after 9/11, right after all of that,
you
know, the first time I got on a plane after 9/11 was to go do 24. And I've got to tell you, it was at a time where, you guys might not remember, you're younger. It was like,
oh, I remember.
No one wanted to get on a plane.
Nobody wanted to fly.
No.
To see what a train from Toronto to LA would be, but it was like 7 days. 7 days on a train, I think, than just, you know, 4 hours on a plane. So,
and nobody wanted to fly.
Getting on that plane for the first time, being very nervous, you know, like we all were, to go do a show about counterterrorists.
You know,
so it was just everything about it, the way it all came together, the fact that Kiefer was involved and had never done TV before, like just everything. Stephen Hopkins, you know, being pulled out of the feature world to do this pilot. How he fell into it, you know, I mean, the boxes, the way the boxes developed, it was all because of the phone calls. Like, everything about it just kind of gelled in a way that I'm not sure you could ever do it again. It was just pure magic.
John, we're in boxes right now.
Yes.
I mean,
right now, look at that.
24's got to get credit for Zoom. I mean, come on.
Yeah, they really need to.
Yeah. But the story I heard, and Dave Thompson was the editor. Dave Thompson was my main editor on Nikita. Joel brought him down to cut the pilot. So he cut the pilot of 24, and he said, one of the biggest problems with 24, which people just gloss over all the time, is that we have massive amounts of phone calls.
Right.
You know, on any other show, you never see a phone call. Because the most boring thing you do is watch a person on the phone. And you always get the, oh, yeah. So that person just said, you never get the phone call. Well, in our case, we had to keep Jack alive. And to keep Jack alive in the episode, you couldn't send him to Long Beach and then have him disappear for 20 minutes of the show. So built in a phone call to his wife, to his daughter, to another person, a new piece of information came in. So when they cut the pilot, the boxes weren't even, you know, thought of it at first. And this is, again, from Dave Thompson, the editor. And he said, damn it, the phone calls just were so boring. It was just people on phones. Nothing was moving. It was like boring. And between him and Hopkins, they said, well, what if we put them both in the screen at the same time? Let's see what that looks like.
That's amazing.
And there it was. And so the phone calls, and again, the phone calls is where we did boxes all the time. You saw that.
Right.
Talking to Jack. But then we started doing it even on normal scenes. We'd do it in the White House, two people talking in the White House, we'd do boxes. It was a great way to remind everyone where everyone was when you went to commercial. You'd come back and go, oh, yeah, Kim is still on the run. And persons are this, doing the press conference. And then, you know, the box would open up and that would be where the next scene was. So it ended up being great, and especially at the end, same thing. You'd get those final boxes to remind everybody, you know, where they were. They were brilliant. I miss them. I mean, I've been on shows where I'm like, oh, damn, if I had boxes here,
it would make life so much easier.
What's great about boxes is you get the person typing that box. You could see the screen, what they were doing in that box. You could see Jack Bauer when Chloe's talking to him in the other box. He's on the binoculars. In that box, you can see what he's seeing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got the whole scene in one frame. And you're getting to choose what you want to look at because we're giving it all to you. It was like, almost like theater. You know how you go to the theater say, I want to look at that guy, then I'm going to look at that guy. It's like there isn't anyone telling you have to look at that guy. We're saying it all is. Enjoy.
I never thought about that.
There's something fitting about today, too. It was 11 years ago today. It was actually Monday, May 24th, 2010. It was the season 8 finale of 24.
Right.
It was on May 24th as well. And 11 years later, you're talking to
we're celebrating.
John Hart. Yes.
And we're Canadians talking about May 24.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It's getting more appropriate than that.
It's very fitting.
Nothing to do with that season.
Right. That's right. That's right.
Only two episodes.
Yeah.
Then I was directing, obviously, 10 or so. I think my final count was around 70 episodes, which I think is probably some kind of record for a 1-hour drama. I'm not sure
how many directors
have done that many, quite honestly. But so that's, but 8, I was gone. I was off doing, I was actually doing the Kennedys with Joel.
Yes, that's great.
When season 8 was happening. So the only one I had nothing to do with.
I'm going to shift really quickly. I watched Forsaken again yesterday. And I watched it yesterday. Like, I watched it when it came out. And I got it as soon as it came out in 2016 for home consumption. And I took it, and my dad and I watched it. And my dad grew up on Roy Rogers. My dad grew up on, the originals. Great. And my Cowboys were Clint Eastwood and, that era. So we could never find a cowboy era that worked for both of us.
Right.
And when I got this, I ran it over to the house because I said, I know I'm going to like it. Absolutely. So he and I watched it, and it was the only Cowboy One movie that we watched that we were both
fantastic to hear. I love that
story. And it turned out to be one of the last movies I watched with my dad, which is still, it gets me watching it yesterday. It was like, I forgot about that. I forgot about the time we spent. We would watch James Bond, so we watched 24 together. He didn't watch it like I did.
My dad and I too. My dad and I loved westerns. That's partly why I did it. Also, you know, so like, but the good thing is too. There's many 24 connections to that movie.
Yes.
First of all, it was born in the time we were waiting for lighting. That's where that movie was born.
Really?
We'd always be like, hey, we got to do a movie together. Yeah, what do you like? I like westerns. You kidding? I was in the rodeo, to the set. I did Young Guns. Well, let's do a western. So We talked about that for like 5 years. We were going to do this Western when we finished. Another 5 years after that when we did it. But so that then you saw Greg Ellis.
Who yes.
You recognize.
Amador.
Yeah, and then we
Michael Wincott.
Michael Wincott, who was actually, we were shooting, I'll never forget this, we were actually shooting Forsaken the day we got the call that
really?
We were going to London to do, you know, Live Another Day.
Wow.
And we were on that awesome. Set when his agent called and said, it looks like, because we knew we were going to do the next 24. We knew that.
Right.
We just didn't know where it was going to land. It was like, they were talking about Atlanta and Toronto and all these places. No one ever mentioned London.
Right. They kept that one from you.
I think Kiefer was on a horse at the time. And I'm like, and he's like taking this call from his agent. He goes, hey, Kassar. I said, what? He goes, what do you think of London? I said, why? He goes, because that's where the next 24 is going to be. Wincott was with us. And we had so much fun with Wincott. We're like,
yeah,
okay, Wincott, you're coming to London with us. We're going to find a part for you so you can hang out with us.
Amazing.
Well,
amazing.
They go to show you how, again, what you how we started this conversation. It's all those connections.
Demi was in A Few Good Men.
And Demi, and of course, had you a go, that's how she was interested in doing the show with us. And there was that other supplement.
Too. That other guy, that other veteran Canadian guy.
When
I watched that scene yesterday, there was a scene where the two of them were riding into town and riding together at the beginning. And it was like, Kiefer looked like he was 12. And I was like, in my head, I was like, that's how I felt. I always felt next to my dad. I always felt like I was this little kid, right? No matter what age we were.
That's right. Your age doesn't matter.
I went there. So film does that for me. It took me back to that place.
It's such an honor for me to work with two classic actors like that, and that for the first time working together. I mean, they had done, you know, another movie, but he was, you know.
Right. They weren't on screen together.
Yeah. He was a young boy. They were never as adults, and then playing father and son. I mean, it truly is a bit of film history. So he did. Unfortunately, we didn't, you know, the producers we had in Canada just didn't kind of live up to their end of the bargain, and we didn't get the wide release we wanted. We did get a premiere at the Toronto Film Festival, which could have been more exciting and an honor for us, but I wish we had hit the theaters. It's a beautiful film.
Yes.
We screened it at the DGA. There was a DGA screening, so I got at least a bunch of my friends to see it on the big screen, because it is it's a big screen kind of movie, definitely.
It is. Yeah. Was there a possibility of Donald being on 24? Is that something you're...
There was a real possibility. We wanted him to be the father. You know, that James Cromwell ended up being the father, but we wanted him to be the father. And as always with actors, the problem, especially when you're talking about Donald Sutherland, you know, and actors like him that never, ever stop working. Christopher Plummer was working to the end. I mean, these guys just one job after another. And, you know, back then, again, we had a really tight schedule. We couldn't wait. You know, the last episode of every season, we virtually shot 3 weeks before you saw it. That's ridiculously tight. In fact, because we did two together, you know, we did 23 and 24 together, the producers would say, you got to shoot all the 23 stuff, all the 24 stuff as early as you can. You know, or the 23 stuff as early as you can. Otherwise, we'll never get this on air. Had to really, it was right down. I think they put the final touch and handed it to someone and put it on the air. Like, it was that crazy tight.
Wow.
Because again, we were an 11-month show. So, and then once we started, that the other fun thing about 24 is once we started airing, we were still shooting. You know, it's not like we would just finish and then walk away and everyone do other stuff. We'd still be shooting. So the other great thing, and I was the first one sort of the group to get into the internet and be listening to all the boards. Remember, we had the boards.
Billboards. Yeah, absolutely.
I'd be there all the time. And I'd be rushing into the writing room going, okay, they love Michelle and Tony. Like, that's a thing. Let's write more Michelle and Tony. Like, so we would I would be like the guy going, well, here's what the fans think. And so I tell fans this all the time. You helped us write the show. Like, you pushed us this way and you pushed us that way. We responded. They, again, not every writer room would do that, because a lot of writers are like, we don't care what they think. We're writing our show. Yeah. But this writer's room did care. They cared a lot about what the fans saw.
No, and I think that shows...
Well, we appreciate it.
Yes, the relationship with the producers of 24 and the writers and you... and everyone involved with 24, that the relationship they have with the fans is spectacular, and we appreciate it a lot that, yeah, you know, that we, the fans, made 24 a big success and a big part of history. And we're glad that, you know, we did. And
yeah, you were with us all the way. It was fantastic.
Still with us.
Absolutely.
With us. John, we want to be mindful of your time.
I'm having fun with you guys.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we can keep going if that's okay.
I'm so honored to hear that.
Yeah, we don't want to wear out. You're welcome for sure, but if you've got more stories, by all means.
Dude, absolutely.
I have too many stories.
Typical barrister.